Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Batman!
Kapow! The dynamic
punch.
Duo.
They literally write punch sometimes.
Really?
I think punch? So. Yeah, I've seen. I mean, I love.
I thought it was just kapow.
Kapow,
and
pow.
Blam.
Blam. Oh, there's a lot
on
of
game nights. We were inspired by the old Batman. Yeah.
The.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what it sounds like every time. Hey, everybody, how are you doing? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we are talking about, well, partners, actually. BattleBond has shown us that partners and the idea of partners is not gone. Thank you, Gavin, for keeping this alive, albeit in a slightly different way. So we're going to be talking about partners in general today, talking about the best partners and actually some of the limitations that unfortunately are baked into the design, and whether or not the partner with commanders are worth playing in your deck, or the 99, and some cards we would play with those decks as well.
Partners old and new. Very exciting.
Yeah, a lot of new partners.
If you want to pick up some of these partner commanders to build decks around, then just go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic product, your singles, anything at all, you really are supporting Game Nights and this podcast, and we super appreciate it.
And as always, a big thank you to Ultra Pro, our other sponsor of the show. Ultra Pro with these amazing playmats. We just got our playmats printed, actually. They're on the way from the press, or they're in the process.
They're in the process of being printed.
Someone sent some emails. I think it goes
takes
into
a little while.
A queue.
Yeah, it takes a little while. It takes a few weeks to get all printed. In fact, we had over 2,000 ordered, so that's going to it's gonna take more than... They're not printed yet. They're being printed.
Yeah, but thank you to Ultra Pro. Obviously, great product. Pick it up at your local LGS. And of course, we have to print some extra playmats for our patrons.
Yes. So if you want to support the show,
If
you want to support the show directly, you can go to patreon.com/commandzone and contribute straight to us. Our patrons do get access to free merchandise once they qualify, so they will be getting the Last Hand playmat. And we also call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Brian G. Broderick.
Brian. You rock.
You rock. And I checked Brian's profile. He passed the amount, and he either has received a free piece of merch or is going to be receiving the Last Stand playmat as a free piece of merch. So congrats, Brian.
Congrats, Brian. Thanks for the support.
Okay, so the best partner, when we put some
the best partner or partner with
commanders.
With? There's a question mark in there, too.
So if you don't know, partner commanders entered the world in Commander 2016. It was the four-color set, and it was a very exciting time because I think there are 105 unique combinations of partners. And they basically have the mechanic partner on them that allows them to be a commander with another card that says the word partner. And we talked a little bit about this. Josh, one of your favorite decks has a partner commander. And it's actually one of the most popular decks on EDH Rec, I might add.
It's Thrasios and Vile Smasher. Yeah, that is my favorite deck still.
Still?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Still to this day. Crazy. Two years later.
But you get to play four colors in that deck, and that's why the partner commanders were exciting. Now, of course, you can do two color combinations with partner. You can also do three color combinations with partners.
No fives yet.
No fives yet. That would be crazy. We'll see.
They just need to create a couple three. They got to be so careful with it, even as I say that out loud.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy, this was your idea for an episode, and it's really fascinating. You kind of put something out there that I hadn't thought about, but I think is definitely true, which is that it feels like the partner commanders didn't quite fulfill the promise that we thought or live up to the expectations. Yeah. I think there's a lot of great things about them, but as you were sort of putting down your thoughts, I was like, yeah, that's kind of true. They didn't quite get there.
It's actually kind of limited in scope. There's 105 possibilities, but honestly, you're only trying to really play 4 to 6 of them total. I mean, look, you can build whatever you want, but the actual way that the partners work, once you start putting two partners together that don't have synergies that actually work that well together, your deck suffers as a result.
I mean, there are four top partners. I never thought about this until you kind of went in and researched this and put these down. And you're basically always partnering a different partner with one of those four.
Mm-hmm.
If you want like an actually strong, good deck. You could obviously do like Ishai and Ikra Shiddiqui and do a deck. You can do it. It's just that combination is going to be worse than probably your other non-partner options. So there are like four commanders that are four partner commanders that are kind of open-ended enough that they allow for a diversity of strategies, and you're kind of shoehorning another one in there.
Yeah, you're either trying to find two partners that work well together, because there are a couple of artifact matters partners. Like, right. Okay, these guys will work well together, or you're being like, I have one partner I want to build around, and another utility partner almost.
Yes.
Which makes sense, but that's why they have to be careful with the design, I'm supposing, because if they make too many of these guys, then you're really cracking the box open.
I mean, and a couple of these are broken.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
I mean, yeah.
Well, let's talk about them.
Yeah.
So the best partner commanders, I call these the tier one partner commanders just because they fit into every archetype, and honestly, they're the best with each other if you're going the competitive route. Kaidel, Chosen of Krufix. This actually had a very fun Game Nights debut, and it did work because Kaidel taps for a lot of mana, and Kaidel will also just destroy you. So it's two, a green and a blue for a 2/3. Legendary creature, human wizard. She's got four arms. Pretty cool. She's like, what's that guy in... Mortal Kombat, Goro?
Goro.
She's it's Goro, Chosen of Krufix. You can tap her to add colorless to your mana pool for each card you've drawn this turn. So she's in green and blue.
It's those not colors super draw cards. Hard to go infinite mana with Kaidel. It's
pretty... untap her a couple of times, have her feed into like a Basalt Monolith, just you're good, you're done.
Staff of Domination, the Umbral Mantle.
The untapper?
I have this deck. I took it apart though after that because it was just like
we were just building to the same home run each time, right?
Basically, like, it was like wheel once, then just untapper with something.
Oh
that,
yeah, wheeling.
Yeah, you just Wheel of Fortune because you put red with a partner with her, and then you just make infinite mana every game, and then fireball everybody out or the equivalent.
Sounds glorious to me.
Yeah, it was fun the first few times, and then it was kind of boring. Anyway, so she's extremely powerful. The next one on the list you have here is, I think, the most broken of all of them, and a tier one commander just by itself, Thrasios, Triton Hero.
It's absurd how tier one this is.
Yeah, it's a green and a blue for a 1/3 Merfolk Wizard. It has a partner, obviously, and the ability is you can pay four and then scry one, then reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land, put it onto the battlefield tapped, otherwise draw a card. So you scry one, and then you either put the land on the battlefield tap if that's what you want, or you draw the card depending on what it is. This card is card draw and mana ramp on a card.
Yep. It's as green-blue as it gets. It only costs two mana to play. The activated ability has no colored mana cost.
That's the big mistake, I think, here, because if you ever create infinite mana, Thrasios draws your entire deck and puts all your lands into play
tapped. Yeah.
But still, that card is insanely broken.
You just need one extra turn card with that at that point, or just a way to untap your lands. There are untapped permanent cards.
A lot of times you don't even need that, because if one of your cards...
True.
If you create an infinite mana, if one of your cards was like Omniscience or something, well, you've already made infinite mana, so you can cast all the cards that you drew, probably. I mean, it could be infinite colorless.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously, Thrasios, just crazy good.
And you can literally put him in any partner deck because, again, green and blue, we've always said this is the two best colors for Commander, as well as just being powerful enough that you don't need to pay color mana for it at all.
And the ability goes with anything, right? It's not...
Yeah,
it doesn't limit you. Strategy specific,
yeah,
right?
Like,
no matter what strategy I'm playing, would I like to draw cards? Yes.
Yeah.
Would I like to mana ramp? Also, yes.
Yeah. Both seem like great ways to have more fun playing the game. The next card, Vile Smasher the Fierce. It's who your Thrasios deck is partnered up with. One, a black and a red for a 2/3 legendary creature, Goblin Berserker. This guy's hilarious. Whenever you cast your first spell each turn...
It's a girl.
Oh, is it? You're right. Actually, she's also... The non-Vile Smashing version is in Cons, or I think Dragons, in the alternate future, or past, whatever. Okay, whenever you cast your first spell each turn, Vile Smasher deals damage equal to that spell's CMC to an opponent chosen at random.
I think this is...
Partnered.
Yeah, I think this doesn't seem overtly powerful, but it goes in any strategy, again, because... Would you like to do damage to your opponents?
Yeah.
Like, it's so open-ended.
For free, basically.
Yeah, it's so open-ended as far as, like, what it's doing that does it care if you have artifacts? Not particularly.
Nah.
Does it care if you cast instants or sorceries? Not really. Does it care about any tribe? Not specifically.
Nah.
Does it care about, you know... I guess the only strategy it wouldn't go with is if you're trying to mill your opponents out?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because then you don't care about damage?
Yeah, I mean, damage... We always say combat's like how you win the game. You usually just swing creatures at people, but damage is the other way, and that's why Vile Smasher works. Again, in every single partner deck that you want to put it in, because at no point are you going to be like, I don't want to hurt my opponents.
I mean, I would actually say that combat damage is not the way that most games of Commander end, and Vile Smasher gives you that alternate way to win that's not combat. Because
Actually, even Group Hug needs win conditions.
No, it's fine, because I'm just casting stuff, gumming everything up, and as I'm doing that, I'm doing damage to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine in Group Hug, too.
It's a great card to be like, it's Vile Smasher's fault, not mine.
Yeah.
even though I cast it and put it in my deck.
The last sort of tier one of the partner commanders is Timna the Weaver. It's one, a white, and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature. Human cleric has lifelink. And at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, you may pay X life, where X is the number of opponents that were dealt combat damage this turn. And if you do, you draw X cards. So let's say I'm in a four-player game, and I attack Jimmy with Timna and, you know, Mel with my Elvish Mystic or something.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's early in the game. They don't have any blockers. Now, after combat, before my second main, I pay 2 life because 2 opponents have taken combat damage, and I draw 2 cards.
Pretty good.
And Timna's got lifelink, so I gain that life back.
The reason that Timna is in this category, even though she seems a little different than the other three, in that it's like, oh, but you have to be attacking and the damage has to hit. If you're doing things like ramping in game with creatures, if you're doing things like casting small spells or even creatures or just ways to get damage in, even Timna by herself, if she hits one person once, is more than worth it.
I also think that she's a card draw card.
Yeah.
So like we were saying with the other, like Kaidel, that's ramp. Thrasios, ramp and card draw. Timna, card draw.
Yeah.
Vial Smasher is the one that I think doesn't fit, but because it's so open-ended. Because what do we say every deck wants? This is proving our point.
Yeah.
Card draw and mana ramp. And Timna is a card draw card. However you slice it, Timna is a card draw card.
Hey, lifelink is important too. You never know. You never know. Could be a big difference maker. Okay, so now let's talk about the second best partner commanders. Now, these cards are actually pretty close behind, but all of them do specifically fall into archetypes. The first is Silas Wren, Seeker Adept. I play this on game nights as well. Got back in Expedition map a lot of times. It's 1 BBB for a 2/2 legendary artifact creature, human, with Death Touch. Whenever Silas Wren deals combat damage to a player, choose target artifact card in your graveyard. You may cast that card this turn, and he has partner. So again, he's very specifically looking in your graveyard and for artifacts. So it's a graveyard artifact specific commander, but every deck has artifacts. I mean, who hasn't had their artifacts blown up? Silas Wren is very good, but he's not as open-ended as the top-tier commander is.
Still pretty open-ended, though, as far as, like...
Yeah. It can be any kind of artifact.
And it's not hard to just play a lot of artifacts.
True.
So
especially in these colors.
Yeah. But again, there are definitely strategies where that you can't run Silas with that, right?
Yeah.
Tribal strategies will be tough. Instant and sorcery strategies will be tough. Creature-based stuff and artifact-based stuff, obviously, but Super Friends, that would be tough. Oh, but yeah, you can run Thrasios if you're running Super Friends. So,
yeah,
it's just a matter of, like, how open-ended. The next one you have down here is Tana the Bloodsower. Tana is 2 red and a green for a 2/2 elf druid with trample. 2/2 with trample, huh? Whenever Tana deals combat damage to a player, create that many 1/1 green sapperling creature tokens. So if you can pump her up, you'd make more tokens.
If you want to sacrifice tokens, yeah. It's token-based decks, obviously, but still very powerful.
Maybe good with something like Timna.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, you just made a deck, dude.
But again, you're in a go-wide strategy. You're kind of, if you were doing an artifact-based deck, then Tana probably doesn't help you in that regard.
True.
Yeah.
The next I have is Rayhan, Last of the Obzon, 1 BBG for a 0/0 human warrior, legendary, of course. He enters the battlefield with 3. She again. Oh my gosh. I need to look better at the art. I just base it off the names.
Well, with Vial Smasher, you can't tell either.
That's true.
From the art.
It is fierce. She is fierce. Rayhan also very fierce, by the way. Enters the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters for it. So she ends up being a 3/3 that costs 3 mana, obviously. Whenever a creature you control dies or is put into the command zone, if it had 1 or more +1/+1 counters on it, you may put that many +1/+1 counters on target creature. So if you pair this up with a blue commander, you can sometimes go infinite with I think grafting is one of the ways you can go infinite.
Oh, interesting.
So obviously, anyone that has played a Gave deck in the past knows the power of +1/+1 counters and the ability to move them around. So Rayhan, obviously, pretty good, but again, very focused on the specific thing. But because it says each creature, any creature dies, you can move the counters around. That's actually a really strong utility and a protection card for any deck that cares about +1/+1 counters.
But you have to care about +1/+1 counters.
Yeah.
Again, Thrasios doesn't... It goes with Planeswalker decks.
It just goes with Planeswalker decks.
Yeah, it goes with Instant Sorcery decks. Rayhan does not.
That's kind of a good bare barometer. It's like, does it work with a Planeswalker deck? Because that's definitely, or a Group Hug deck even. Because that's definitely on the outside fringe strategies.
That's why Thrasios is so good. Because the answer to that question, Group Hug, Planeswalker, Instant and Sorcery deck, anything.
Yes.
But the only thing you could say, even a mill deck probably would be fine
with
Thrasios. It's not like he's getting in the way. Rayhan does nothing with, a lot of those strategies. Okay, and the last one in the sort of second tier of partner commanders. And I think this is the closest to a tier one.
Yeah, I agree.
Commander. Actually, if it was like two mana less, it probably would be. It's Ravos.
I think that's the only reason I didn't put it in the top tier, because it does cost.
It's overcosted, yeah. So it's Ravos, Soul Tender. Three, a white and a black, so a 5-mana 2/2 flying human cleric. It says other creatures you control get +1/+1. And then it says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So, again, this doesn't work in a Planeswalker deck, so it doesn't pass the Thrasios test, mm-hmm. the brand new, just now coined
Thrasios test. Yeah.
But at the same time, creature deck is as open-ended as like artifact deck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's way more open-ended than, say, specifically a token deck or a +1/+1 counter deck. Yeah.
And this goes to your hand, so it's technically a little better than what Silas Wren's ability is, because he has to attack and hit. Like, he has Death Touch, but Ravos has Flying.
And then you have to cast it kind of now, otherwise you lose the ability to cast it next turn. Yeah, that's true.
So Ravos, I think, is close to Silas. I still put Silas above just because I think... the other thing is Ravos' Anthem ability is pretty strong as well if you're going any kind of just
attack. But Silas strategy. Is a 3-drop.
Yeah.
And Ravos is a 5-drop.
Yeah, and I think in general, because you can play more artifacts in decks than creatures and from different colors, you're going to want to, even if you're going 4-color, I think Silas Wren is still more flexible.
Interesting, and it's an interesting point, and I think this demonstrates it, which is that like that second tier of stuff is not even close to as good. And if
Not even close.
If you start pairing it with the not tier one stuff, so if you're not, if you say, I'm going to build a Ravos deck, but I can't pair it with Kaidel, Thrasios, File Smasher, or Timna, the deck is pretty...
Interesting. It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, and by good, I just mean, you know, it's not very powerful. That doesn't mean you can't have fun and you can't do cool things, but at the same time, it's definitely not going to be like a feared deck in your playgroup.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you can't load it up with good stuff either, right? You can turn any of the partner commander decks into a good stuff deck, and
because you can do four colors. Yeah.
The other partners we didn't talk about were Bruce Tarl, Sidar Kondo, Kraum, Ludovic's Opus, Akiri Line Slinger, and Ishai. I say Ishai is maybe close to tier two just because this is a thing that happens in games. But again, I think four mana is a little expensive.
It's just a big dumb flyer, though, at that point.
I love big dumb flyers.
Ludovic.
Ikris Shiddiqui, and then Ludovic, yeah.
Ludovic is in my Tim deck, but again, it's so such narrow. A specific deck, right? Like, how many decks? Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
So that's the interesting thing I thought about partners. Like, oh, that's why I want more partner commanders, because the most powerful ones dominate the field in terms of both the decks on EDH Rec, if you count them there, and also just which commanders want to be paired with those guys, and just specifically with that top four, maybe five if you're going to throw Ravos in there.
So really, when you talk about possibilities, and I'm not going to do the math right now, it's not 105.
It's not 105. Yeah, you can make 105, but if you scroll all the way down EDH Rec, you're getting into, like, there's, like, two decks.
See what the least it's like saying you can play with, like, I don't know, one of those old legends from Legend that doesn't, like, Stag or something. Like, Stang can't be Stag. Stang. Stang can be your commander. It definitely can.
I do love Stang. It's pretty funny.
But it doesn't. That doesn't mean that it's a good deck or it's going to be competitive.
On EDH Rec right now, maybe one of you viewers can change this. There's only one deck for Akiri Lineslinger and Ikris Shiddiqui the Usurper.
Played partner pair?
Yep. You have a partner that cares about artifacts and wants to get buff and hit people, and then a menace that...
This one cares about butts, right?
That equals the creature's toughness.
Yeah.
So, and Akiri gets +1/+0, not a toughness buff.
But it's an 0/3 to start.
It's an 0/3 to start. So, yeah, at 3 at the baseline ain't so bad, you know.
You get 4 colors.
Yeah. You can gain life, and then you can hit them.
You're missing blue. So, no wonder. You're missing the best color.
Yeah, it's true. anyway, if you'd like to change that and tell us how we are so wrong about this, please.
An Ikris Shiddiqui and a
Akiri. Akiri, a Lineslinger deck,
I don't even know the name of the creature.
Okay, so let's look at partner with commanders. Now, these came out in Battle Bond, and the reason that they're different, and honestly, I'm a little upset that they didn't find a way to make partner a little more ubiquitous, but at the same time, you have to preserve the integrity of the set that it's in. Otherwise, you're going to make it a really bad drafting environment for a lot of people that will be affected. So people are saying like, this is a Commander Masters, but it isn't because of partner with, I think.
I don't think it's a problem within the draft environment. I think it's a problem. I think they were being careful, and I'm glad they were about the Vile Smashers and the Thrasios and just breaking that. This is the problem they're going to run into. It's very hard for them to sort of test any new partner commander that's able to partner with other partner commanders.
Oh, yeah.
Because because the combinations, there's so many.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you threw some of these as partners into the mix, things would be just really weird for sure.
I think your chance of it being broken is so much higher.
Yeah.
So,
I would love to see a card.
I understand why they did it. I mean, there are some people out there, let me ask you.
Oh.
that are hoping that because we got partners within Battle Bond, that maybe in Commander 2018 we'll get some kind of partner thing.
I would hope. I mean, look, who knows? But at the same time, it's really confusing for me to have it be called partner with. I almost wish they said something like link.
Bonded?
Bonded, yeah. Or,
Battle Bond?
Battle Bond.
I'm surprised that it wasn't bonded with.
But maybe because the word partner is being used here again, it means that Wizards wants to play more around with the partner, and then maybe there's going to be a word after kind of stuff. I don't know. Look, I have no clue, but who knows?
I have no clue, but who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you who knows. Gavin Verhey.
Gavin. Text me.
Ask
is that
him.
How it works?
I know. I'm just telling the audience. Go ahead and ask Gavin Verhey on Twitter because we don't know. So, yep. Okay.
Okay. So look, we're going to examine each of the partner combinations because they can only be partnered with each other. It's going to be a shorter list. There's six of them we'll talk about total. And we're also going to talk about cards that you could put in the decks as well as whether or not these cards would be – this is my hopeful thinking of like which of the real partners right now should we errata these two to partner with? But we can't do that, unfortunately. Because there's only a couple. Okay. All right, so I'll read one, you read the other.
Oh, okay.
The first is Rowan Kenrith and Will Kenrith. I'll read the red one, you read the blue one. This is perfect.
Okay, that's perfect.
Four red for a Planeswalker. That's right, we're starting with a Planeswalker. It's partner with Will Kenrith, so anytime one enters the battlefield, you can search your deck for the other, or if they can both be your commander. And Rowan Kenrith can be your commander. So she has three abilities. Her plus two, during target player's next turn, each creature that player controls attacks if able. Her minus two, she deals three damage to each tapped creature. Her minus eight, target player gets an emblem. With whenever you activate an ability that isn't a man ability, you may copy it and choose new targets for the copy. So she has a hurt a lot of tapped creatures, and as well as make every creature attack. Goad them, essentially, but they can still attack you.
Yeah, I wish it would have just said...
Goad.
During target player's next turn, goad all players target player... Or sorry, goad all creatures target player controls.
Would they even be able to attack your two-headed giant team if that was the case?
Yeah, because if they're not... Because you do... The new rule with Dominaria was you do sort of declare your creatures to attack a
specific
player.
Person. A player, yeah.
Yeah, and Goad also is... I think once it's down to two players, they can attack you, right? The way Goad is worded?
Yeah, I think so.
So it would still work. I think they just didn't want to add another keyword, another... You know, Goad's not in the set otherwise.
That's true. That's a good point.
But, I mean, Rowan...
Yeah, it's attack a player other than you, if able.
If
so
able,
if there's no
yeah.
one else to attack, they'll go straight for you.
So, Rowan seems fine, I guess.
Six mana is a lot. Her
a
ultimate
lot.
Is sweet, but if you're only playing it for her ultimate, then maybe...
Then there are better commanders.
Oh, yes.
For the ultimate, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the brother is Will Kenrith. These are like the Lannisters, by the way.
Yeah.
This is totally Joffrey and...
Joffrey? You mean...
Joffrey
Cersei.
Was a Lannister, we all know. Oh yeah, it's
Cersei
it's
Jaime
and Cersei.
Yeah,
because they're twins.
I don't want to see what's coming out.
But this guy
Joffrey.
Looks more like Joffrey.
That's true, he does.
A little bit.
He looks definitely like a younger Lannister. He doesn't have the ruggedness that Jaime does.
Yeah, exactly. And he's still got both hands.
Both.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Will Kenrith is the blue one. Four blue for a four loyalty planeswalker. Plus two, until your next turn, up to two target creatures each have base power and toughness 0/3 and lose all abilities. Negative two, target player draws two cards. Until your next turn, instant sorcery and planeswalker spells that player casts cost two generic mana less to cast. So you don't have to choose yourself with that one.
Interesting, yeah.
And then the ultimate negative eight is target player gets an emblem with whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy. Again, that's target player. So was mm-hmm. Rowan. You can give emblems to another player. You're rarely going to do that, but it is a possibility. Will's a lot better than Rowan.
Yeah, just because his minus two is very powerful, making stuff cost two generic less to cast for instant sorceries and planeswalkers.
I just think it's going to be safer to play Will in a lot of instances, too, because the plus two actually sort of blanks two creatures.
Yeah.
And so, whereas Rowan, you could play it into a board and then just get attacked and died. Even if you plus two are like, well, yeah, I was going to attack the Planeswalker anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But Will comes down and messes with that a little bit, the calculation, because you go, okay, well, the two best creatures are 0/3s now, and maybe there's not even more than that. Or at least I can block the other ones or something. So
turn that Blightsteel Colossus the other direction.
And the negative two, you're right, could be... Because you untap, you negative two, you yourself draw two cards, you play a land... And now you've got seven mana available, but all your instants and sorceries cost two less.
Yeah.
So it's
not hard to think of going infinite there either.
It's potentially, yeah. Imagine you play like, I don't know, High Tide or something. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you just got a bajillion mana.
You have a Mizzix
deck. And all your stuff is, you know, super discounted. I think Will's actually pretty good just as a mono blue commander almost. Six mana is a lot.
Yeah.
But
Will is definitely the better of the two by a long shot. And so cards that you might want to play if these two were your commanders would be stuff like you could be very mean and play Jockle Hops. Because with Will out, you're playing lands at the same rate as everyone else. You're going to start playing stuff faster as well. Not to mention just Planeswalkers by themselves.
Planeswalkers and Jockle Hops are great because Jockle Hops was...
Yeah, it's destroying...
It doesn't say Planeswalker on it because they didn't exist back then.
For six mana, artifacts, creatures, and lands, and they can't be regenerated. That's pretty intense.
I almost feel as if Jockle Hops, Nev's Disc, cards like that should be errated to say permanents, but I don't like errata in general, so I'm fine with it. They don't.
Yeah, and we just had a real big errata recently with Target.
Oh, yeah.
Disrupt Decorum, also, speaking of Goad, it's the sorcery from Commander 2017, and I think Conspiracy as well, where you goad all creatures you don't control until next turn, those creatures attack each combat and someone else. So the reason that that's obviously good is that it works well with what Rowan's doing. Which is why I like quite a bit.
Yeah, and it stops... Yeah, exactly. It stops them from attacking you specifically. And when you got Planeswalkers as your commanders, even if you don't have Rowan out, even if it's just Will, it's still good. The next one you've got down here is Reigns of Power.
This is a goofy one.
Two blue for an instant. Untap all creatures you control and creatures target opponent controls. You and that opponent each gain control of all creatures the other controls until end of turn. Those creatures gain haste until end of turn. So... Are you assuming you don't have a lot of creatures?
Well, it's like, hey, make our creatures attack, swap them. You know, now you give them zero creatures and you get the creatures that are supposed to attack because of Rowan or whatever. Because of Rowan, because she's trying to make other creatures attack. So you're
I think you could swap him, attack with theirs.
Yeah, you can do that too, which is pretty funny.
And then can Rowan target you or is it opponent with the negative?
Rowan can say during target player's next turn. So yeah.
No, in the negative two.
Oh, negative two, three damage to each creature target player.
So you
controls.
Could target yourself. So yeah. I'm going to take your creatures, attack with them,
whop them
and
all.
Then I'm going to negative and targeting myself and do negative three to all my creatures, which are actually your creatures. Yeah. That's a cool combination. I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of those big one shot. Everyone goes, oh, snap. But, you know, it's how it goes. Here's the next one. Wartax, enchantment, two in the blue. Are they pirates? Those guys are pirates. Uh-huh. X in the blue. This turn, creatures can't attack unless their controller pays X for each attacking creature they control. So again, these are good with Rowan. You just make them pay.
Make them attack, but they can't.
They can't
attack
actually
you.
Attack because they'll have to pay, you know, six mana per or whatever.
Well, they just can't attack you.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Which is great. And you can use it actually during any turn. So which is really interesting. I kind of like this card in general. I'm surprised I haven't seen it before.
It's propaganda-ish.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it makes you have to spend mana, but it does stop other people from attacking other people too.
Oh, it can't attack. It's not just you. Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Unless their controller
pays
X.
Oh, I thought it can't attack you.
Yeah.
I think I recognize this art. I'm sure I've bought this card, like going, I'm going to put this in this deck, and then it just got
Are there
cut.
Any foil versions, guys? Let me
it's
know.
Mercadian Mass, so.
Yeah. You got to have a lot of mana for this to be really fun and useful. But yeah, anything that just has high CMC. Like,
just because of the forking?
Because of the forking, and because Will can make it cheaper. So you can play Expropriate a turn early as well.
Two turns early,
yeah.
Interesting.
Pay it for seven. Right? Because it costs nine.
Yeah.
So you play Will for six and then Expropriate for
seven is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous at nine. Yeah. I've still never lost when I've cast it.
That card should almost be like an 11 drop, honestly, to be fairly costed, I think.
Yeah. It's way too good. And if you forked it.
Oh, gosh.
Good night. Seriously.
Yeah, it's a real good night.
Beacon of Tomorrows, is that the extra turn beacon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
any extra turn is going to be good because...
You get to use their abilities again and cast
them
for cheaper.
And then you get to the part where you're forking it.
Yeah,
so.
Which is nuts.
Okay. Sold.
All right, let's
Wait. So there's a question here.
Oh, that's right.
Do you think that this partner pair is good, though? Rowan and Will. Is that a good deck?
Heck no. Six CMC Planeswalkers is just not a real... Because having them both out is when it really shines. I think you're much better putting this in a deck that has red and blue and would either use one or both their abilities. Because if you think about it, each one of these cards draws a card when they come out. A very specific card, but it draws a card if you play it in the 99, which is makes the value actually
a little
higher.
If you play them as partners, you just start with an extra card out there.
You do start with an extra card.
Here's the thing. They can't be worse than just Will is by himself.
True.
Right?
Well, they're definitely better.
You could still play
a
mono blue deck with Will and Rowan in the command zone, and it would just be a Will deck. And Will is pretty good.
Yeah, Will is very good, I think.
It is 6 CMC, so that's the knock, I think, against Will. But that partner pairing cannot be worse than
just one,
then the best one of them is.
True. I think I'm just rather thinking that there's going to be a lot more scenarios that you want to just have one or the other in the 99 rather than trying to build a deck around this and make it work.
Well, yeah.
Because this is almost kind of group huggy with what Rowan's doing in a weird way.
Rowan specifically is way worse when they know it's going to come.
Yeah.
Will's fine, but Rowan is the type of creature you wouldn't want to attack mm-hmm. if you know they can play Rowan next turn because they can play her and immediately do three to all of your creatures that attacked. So you'd be like, okay, they're out five mana next turn they'll be at six. I'm not going to attack with my creatures with three toughness right now
because they can all get zapped by Rowan. Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you don't even know Rowan's in the deck or if they have it in their hand, then that card becomes more powerful. Because when it's sneaky,
it's like a pseudo board wipe too. Yeah, it's interesting. I think the partner pairing, if there are cool decks to be made, they'll be fun. But I would rather, I think they're more, much more powerful if you have a couple more colors than just blue and red to play with them.
Green, obviously.
Yeah, you definitely.
But
want
if you're gonna doubling season into somebody's ultimate, neither of these win you the game on the spot. You rather just do one of the commanders that does. I mean, if that's your thing, which it'll be more people's thing because more doubling seasons are going to be out there.
The other
thing,
though, is that you will play Will in the Planeswalker deck. He makes your Planeswalkers cheaper, you know?
And he protects.
Could you imagine?
He protects your board.
Could you imagine playing two Planeswalkers in one turn because of Will? Because they both cost two less? That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Okay. Let's go on to our preview cards. Zinder Split. I have Wisdom and a Cone. I have Chaos. We've talked about these every episode. Do we have to read them again? Okay, fine.
No.
Zinder Split is 4 and a blue for a 1/4 homunculus. And at the beginning of your combat, you flip a coin until you lose a flip. And then whenever a player wins a flip, you draw a card.
You have a 50% chance to draw one card.
Just with Zinder Split.
Just
by
with
himself.
Zinder Split. And then after that, you have a 25% to draw two in a row. And then whatever, it goes down from there. Because if you win two in a row, you draw two cards. That's pretty sweet, actually. If you told me every turn I had a 25% chance to draw two cards and a little less chance to draw three and even less to draw four, I'd be like,
I'm not a mathematician, but how does that average out cards per turn? It's slightly more than 50%.
It's better than Scry. I'll say that much. It's much better than Scry because 50% of a card possibility is much better, I think, than...
Well, see, yeah, because half the time you draw a card. Mm-hmm. But then some percentage of the time you draw a card, you draw a second card. So that screws up the math as far as it's not just half a card.
Because the upside gets exponential.
And then some percentage of the time you draw three cards, and very rarely will you draw more than that. But that... That's me trying to do the math.
I think it's better than Scry. It's obviously not as good as just drawing a card. And Okun, Eye of Chaos.
Yeah, still trying to do the math.
Josh is going to be in another zone for a while. You're in the
command
zone.
Game nights where I went into Beautiful Mind mode?
Yeah.
That's not what's happening right now, actually. In my brain right now, it's just like, it's like the old MS-DOS with just the cursor blinking.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's it.
It's like one squeaky wheel. Barely
the hamster's
moving.
Not even in there.
Yeah.
The hamster's like holding a beer and just drinking, looking at the wheel.
Yeah, he's kind of like, every time he breathes towards it, it's almost there. Akun, Eye of Chaos is 4 and a red for a 3/3. He's obviously partners. At the beginning of combat on your turn, flip a coin until you lose a flip. So the exact same text, except whenever a player wins a coin flip, you double Akun's power and toughness until end of turn. So he can just become massive. You become a 6/6, 12/12, 24/24. And if you increase his power past that, then obviously that's how math works.
And the thing about these is they stack. So yes. Zinder Split and Akun would mean you're flipping two coins. In which case, you have an even money shot at drawing at least one card. Mm-hmm. And again, your percentage goes up of drawing two, three.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love these guys, actually, because it makes a coin flip deck a real thing. A card shot up in price thanks to this deck, and it's called Krark's Thumb.
Oh, yeah. I have a couple of these, luckily, because I was building a coin flip deck years ago. Remember when I was building a chaos deck?
Yes.
Well, it ended
Josh's amazing chaos deck.
Which was no fun, but it ended up not being any coin flip cards, but when I was originally building it, I just ordered all the coin flip cards thinking like, oh, these will go in. And then I cut that sub theme out of it. But as a result.
You got some thumbs?
I have all the coin flip cards.
You should build this deck.
Because of Jason Alt, I ordered two of all the coin flip cards. Because he told us once, if you like a card, someone else will probably like it. So you should order two instead of one when you order cards because they're probably going to go up in value because you like it. So somebody else will like it.
Every retailer in the world just went, thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you, Jason Alt.
Thank you for doubling our profits, essentially.
Here's the thing. Like, it sounds like I made money on Krark's Thumb, but the problem is I also bought two of about 20 other coin cards that have not gone up in value. So
yeah.
I should build this deck, except for I just moved and all of those cards are in a box somewhere and I have no idea where. I would love to build this deck before GP Vegas, but probably not going to happen. Okay, sorry.
Think about it. Okay, correct. Let's read the text on the card. Very simple. It's a 2-mana legendary artifact, so you can't play your two copies, unfortunately, though. Yeah, you know, just
Elder Dragon Highlander.
Just a downside if somehow you're able to play two.
You could copy it. Oh, no, legendary.
Man.
You could Helm of the Host. Nope. Not a creature.
If you could copy this, though, because it says if you would flip a coin, instead flip two coins and ignore one. So every time a player flips a coin, guess what? You're flipping two coins now. I'm pretty sure that works out like that. So if you flip two coins,
that's kind
and
of
you
insane.
Win both the flips, and you can still ignore one, you're still drawing two cards. So obviously incredibly good with Xander Split. Or Xander Split.
Oh, man. This is making me excited about that deck. I gotta open 50 million boxes.
That was actually
to
the entire point of this episode to make you build that. Yeah, in my stead.
The next one you have listed is Chance Encounter. I have two of these. Two red, really? Red for an enchantment. It says flip a coin on it.
That's true.
Two red enchantments. Whenever you win a coin flip, put a luck counter on Chance Encounter. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Chance Encounter has 10 or more luck counters on it, you win the game.
We all love this.
So you just have to win 10 coin flips in a game where Chance Encounter is out.
Krug's Thumb and both your commanders means you're flipping
a bajillion.
Yeah, minimum four coins that turn. And then if you win on any of them, you just keep going.
That's the thing is with Krug's Thumb and either one of the commanders, you just have to win one to get another chance.
So yeah, so Krug's Thumb literally is probably the best card in the deck.
Oh,
By far. You also have the Rings of Bright Hearth.
Think about this one.
Obviously, everyone loves this card because it's just very good in general. 3-mana artifact. Whenever you activate an ability, if it isn't a mana ability, you may pay 2. If you do, copy that ability, and you can choose new targets for the copy. So this works, obviously. There are some cards out there that help you flip cards, including this one that lets you flip actually infinite coins.
Yeah, this one with...
you just win the game.
Yeah, okay. It's Frenetic Efreet. It's 1 blue-red. I have 2 of these cards. I remember ordering it. It's from Mirage.
This card is sweet, by the way.
Yeah. It's a flying... It's a 2-1 of flying for 1 blue and a red. It says, you pay 0, flip a coin. So you could just flip coins. If you win the flip, Frenetic Efreet phases out. If you lose the flip, sacrifice Frenetic Efreet. Here's the thing, though. You can flip at instant speed.
Yep, it just costs 0. So you just activate it 1,000 times. Even if it's bounced, the trigger's still on the stack. You're still flipping coins.
You're like, oh, I win that flip. Okay, I'll let that one resolve. And then we'll flip it again. Oh, I lose that one. In response to that,
I'll just flip it again.
Is that how that works?
You literally just trigger it 1,000 times, and you have to flip a coin each time.
Oh, yeah, there's still all the
permanent. It doesn't care if the permanent's on the battlefield. You literally just go, I play Frenetic Efreet, I'm going to use it 1 billion times. I win the game because I have Chance Encounter out, and I will win 10 of those flips.
Even with just Xander Split out, you just draw your entire deck.
Yeah.
And with Akone, you just make him infinitely large.
Ding, 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 ding. Frenetic Efreet. Can I buy one off you?
I have 2.
Perfect.
So, yes.
You finally will make some money back. Finally, there's cards like Stitch in Time, 1 blue and a red, flip a coin. If you win the flip, take an extra turn after this one. If you just have commanders out that say draw a coin, draw a coin. You could technically just play this as a 3-mana draw 1 card potentially, right? So like the downside of cards like this is actually mitigated quite a bit by the commanders.
Yeah, I have.
Do you have 2 of those? This one's on the riskier side. It's a 3-mana extra turn card though, Josh. Every time.
Wasn't there a legacy deck built around this thing? I think there was. Somebody was playing around.
That's amazing.
My guess is I have 2, but I don't remember that one specifically. So it's possible that I looked at that one and went, which is not the right attitude to have. Okay.
I believe these cards are better as commanders, not in the 99.
100%, because enables an entire deck. I wish they would have found a few more things like this, but this is great, where they literally are creating a deck that just kind of didn't exist. I have played against a coin flip deck at a GP. I forget. I think his name's Mike. Oh, man, I'm sorry I'm messing up your name. And it's pretty sweet, but that's the only one I've ever seen. And you had to just run, like, you know, some commander that didn't matter at all just to have blue and red in your colors. So
true that.
Yeah. Okay. The next pairing partners with is Peer, Imaginative Rascal, and Toothy, Imaginary Friend.
Toothy.
Peer is 2 in a green for a 1/1 human. Partners with Toothy. If one or more counters would be put on a permanent your team controls, that many plus 1 of each of those kinds of counters are put on that permanent instead.
Yes.
It's kind of like Hardened Scales in that if it doesn't double the amount.
Just adds 1 more.
If you put 3 on, you're going to put 4 now with Pier, not 6.
Counters on permanents. Planeswalkers.
Counts loyalty, counts all kinds of the other weird counters, but doesn't count things like Infect or experience counters that go on players. Being,
yeah, on a permanent. Yeah. Toothy, imaginary friend, 3 in the blue for a 1/1. Partners, obviously, with Pierre. Whenever you draw a card, play +1/+1 counter on Toothy. And when Toothy leaves the battlefield, draw a card for each +1/+1 counter on it. So obviously the Planeswalkers are very good in this deck. In fact, I'm much more of a fan of Pierre as in terms of a build around than Toothy.
I think Toothy's just generically good.
Yep.
Can kind of go in any blue deck and not be embarrassing.
This would be a great card, by the way, that just said partner. I think this would be fine.
Yeah. It is card draw.
It is card draw, but it does require Toothy to leave the battlefield and, you know.
This is why it's hard for the partner, because I'm like, yeah. My brain's like, well, hold on, compare it with each possibility, and then it's like,
true.
And then the gopher takes a break. And
if there was a partner that flickered something, then Toothy would not be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think these cards, obviously some of the, there's like the storage counter lands that work really well with Pierre as well, because you get one more counter out of that.
Vivid lands.
Yeah, the Vivid
lands. You put down here are really good. Yeah, Planeswalkers.
As Foretold, you know, you get to put a time counter on As Foretold, and you can pay zero rather than the mana cost for a spell you cast with converted mana cost is X or less, mm-hmm. or X the number of time counters on As Foretold. So you can like make it 2 to 4, or, you know, you basically start jumping that up real fast. It's more of a build around, but I could see decks that would want Pierre. Let's say you just know you have bigger things, is at 2, 4, and 6, or with Pierre out.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's better than a lot of the +1/+1 counter options that are available? Like, it, to me, it feels good with, like, things you normally can't mess with.
True.
Like, loyalty counters, and the Vivid Lands thing is cool. The Storage Lands is, I think, a little better. That ramps you, but I'm not sure that it's good
not,
enough.
Yeah.
It's like a hardened skills in your command zone, but it's a 3-mana 1/1.
Yeah, and do you really need hardened skills in the deck that you're...
I mean, hardened skills is in most of those +1 counter decks, but it's partially good because it's 1-mana as an enchantment.
Yeah, and it's also, in this case, because it says counters on it, just on any permanent for Pierre, that you want to try and think bigger, it actually kind of restricts you a little more because it's like, well, do I want just this thing, and is building my deck around this mechanic going to hurt it overall, mm-hmm. or is he just better inside the 99?
Now, my question is, how do you put Pierre in a Marchesa deck? Actually, it wouldn't matter. It doesn't place the counters. It just places an extra one, and Marchesa doesn't want a lot, just wants one on everything. The last thing you have down here is the Graft mechanic. So Graft is a mechanic that comes on a lot of creatures, and it'll say, like, Graft and then a number. So let's take the Cytoplast Rootkin as an example. It's 2 green-green for a 0/0, but it has Graft 4, which means this creature enters the battlefield with 4 +1/+1 counters on it, 5 if Pierre is out. And then there's usually some ability tied to the +1/+1 counter. Graft 4 comes in with 4 counters. And then whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you may have a +1/+1 counter. You may move a +1/+1 counter from this creature onto it. So. Yeah. All right.
So it places a counter and you get to double it up. So you're essentially, you can start like making little graft chains if you make a graft deck where it's like, be bigger, everyone. Throw one
right.
on.
Right. So Cytoplast comes out, Pierre's already out. So Cytoplast gets 5 counters. Mm-hmm. And then you play another creature and you choose to graft one of the counters from Cytoplast. It goes down to 4 onto the new creature. But because the counter's being placed, it actually gets 2.
Yeah. And if that's a graft creature, it gets, you know, even more because it comes in with all that stuff too. So there's a lot of different, it's every instance a counter is being put on.
It starts to have a sort of doubling season like effect in that it's placing, it's kind of placing more than one.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And we didn't really talk about Toothy because again, Toothy is generically just going to be good. So I think for sure these are not great partners together. I don't think you're building a deck that really does anything if you do this, if that makes sense. You can draw cards, which is awesome thanks to Toothy, but I would rather have these in different decks, to be honest. I don't even know if I'd play them in the same deck.
They don't really... I mean, Toothy's fine with Pierre in that you always want to draw cards in whatever deck, but they don't work together exactly.
Yeah.
Because like we were saying, I don't think you're building the Pierre deck with the +1/+1 counter themes.
Yeah. It's interesting because the drawing cards is the important part about Toothy, and Pierre doesn't help you draw cards, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what would really take it over the top. If Pierre,
I mean, it
was,
helps you put on more counters, which
helps
would
you put on
more
counters, more cards. But there's like that one extra step that just kind of holds it back a little bit, I think, from I would rather have it be in the 99.
Here's the thing. That deck would still be fine, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think the deck would be fine.
Because it's going to draw cards. Like, it's going to do it a little bit slower than maybe some of the other Simic options, but still better than all the Boros options. So,
well, when you put it like that, Josh,
that deck won't be bad. But yeah, I agree. I would say in the 99. I think they're not even in the 99 together most of the time. They're in different decks.
All right, next up we have Virtus the Veiled and Gorm the Great. I love these names. So Virtus the Veiled is a 2 and a black for a 1/1 partner with Gorm and has Death Touch. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, that player loses half their life rounded up. So it's a 3-mana 1/1 Death Touch, but here's the thing. It's not going to really find that many ways to get in for combat, that's for sure.
Well, unless Gorm the Great's out, because Gorm the Great is 3 and a green for a 2/7 with Vigilance. And Gorm the Great must be blocked if able. And Gorm the Great must be blocked by 2 or more creatures if able.
So he sort of stands in front with his 2 big arms trying to block as many creatures as possible. And then behind him, Virtus is like, I'm coming in. And then stabs him for a giant Quietus Spike level of damage.
If they have 2 or less creatures and you have both these creatures out, then they're going...
They're going down.
They're losing half their life.
And maybe all of their life if you're going to play it with cards like Exquisite Blood. And then you combine that with Sanguine Bond.
Well, you don't even need Virtus or Gorm for that to work.
That's true. That's true. But Exquisite Blood's a deck that you could play in this deck. Wound Reflection is the one that really just kills them on the spot because it's at the end of, I think, every... Each end step.
They lose life equal to the amount of life they lost that turn.
So if they lost half their life, they lose the other half. Not to mention that this begins at the beginning of each end step, and it's each opponent. So it affects your opponent's combats as well when they start fighting each other.
And the great thing about Wound Reflection is you can do it afterwards, right? So you attack, and Virtus gets through, and maybe they think, I'm at 30, it's 15 damage. I'm going to take it rather than block with something because Virtus has Death Touch, and I'll just go to 15. It's not the best, but I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play Wound Reflection afterwards.
And they're like,
that's not okay.
It's not okay. I'm losing the rest of my life. The Archfiend of Despair is a new card from Balaban that does basically the same thing. And then the last card I had here was Infiltration Lens. This is a weird card. From Scars of Mirrodin. It's a 1-mana equipment that you normally wouldn't play, but it says whenever equipped creature becomes blocked by a creature, you may draw 2 cards. Equip 1.
Oh, so you put out a creature that kind of have to block.
Yeah, like they're, it's, you know, it's
the same.
It
works on Gorm, too.
Yeah, yeah, it works really well on Gorm. But,
Would it? I shouldn't ask these questions because we get.
I believe it will trigger multiple times, or it's only once. I'm not sure.
So all possibilities.
All possibilities. That's how I make this show work for me, Josh. I say both things and say it really convincingly. And hey, you know what? It's going to be true either way.
Either one could happen.
Yeah. See, I'm just constantly winning here on the show. All I want to do is win. But I believe it will trigger multiple times. You know. It'll say it probably.
Ask a judge about that one because I don't want to Google it right now.
Although Commander players are closer to judges than most players, I believe.
If that's true, that's really bad because we mess up rules constantly.
Yeah. Well, it's also because we have to always think about these ridiculous interactions.
It's true.
I think both these cards are better than the 99. I think Virtus the Veil is just a fun one to put in the deck if you are running a Wound Reflection kind of deck.
Or Alesha, who smiles at death, some way to cheat it out. It's an Azura Assassin. If it was a demon, you could do like. Kalia, but you can't.
Kalia has Master of Cruelties, which is a demon, I believe.
Yeah, and we mentioned Gorm in like a Doran deck or something. I think would probably be pretty good because you are forcing people to block it. So like your Oracle of Moldiah is just going to die to that thing, right?
True.
So it can kind of pick off their little, you know, Seaborn Muses. People don't want to block with a lot of creatures that people play aren't there to ever block ever.
Yeah.
And so Gorm can kind of eat those things depending. Obviously, you can't eat Seedborn unless it's in a Doran deck or something like that, but it's interesting.
We'll see what happens.
I don't think Gorm's very good. No. Virtus is by far the better one, and even that, it's just tough. If you have to deal combat damage.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you ever been hit by Sire of Insanity or... It's very rare.
Oh, Master of Cruelties?
Master of Cruelties.
They have to sneak it out. It's just hard, right? Let's say you board wipe and then maybe you do like a creature with a haste.
Like how many times have you ever been hit by a Master of Cruelties?
I think twice, and it was only because of Kalia sneaking it in.
So not very many times.
Not very many,
yeah,
no.
It's just a rare thing.
Okay, so we have Sylvia Brightspear and Gorvath Brightflame. We're not going to spend much time on this. Sylvia basically is a white card that's a 2/2 double strike, and dragons your team control have double strike, and Gorvath is 5 and a red for a 3/4 red card. Their partner is Flying Haste, and it says knights your team controls have flying and haste.
All your knights jump on the back of dragons.
Yeah, and Sylvia makes all your dragons double strike because it's the human slashing and the dragon breathing fire. Here's the thing. It's Boros. If you play this as you Boros your commanders, like you're just really shooting yourself in the foot here.
I mean, you have to pick one. So you're either a knight deck or a dragon deck, right?
Because I'd rather be a dragon deck.
But then you might as well just go with one of the 5 colors or the 100%, Scion or something.
Yeah.
So I think you got to be a knight deck. In which case, In which case, you're a knight deck.
And you're not playing Korvath and Sylvia as your, you know, like, you'd want to do a knight deck with a more colors. That's all I got to say. They're red and white. These are nuts and limited, but real bad in Commander.
They need to make new, every time. Boros Commanders every time are just, like, boring.
Good for limited most times. Like Aurelia? I guess that card is absurd.
Well,
limited.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, you're not wrong.
Look, I got to give it some. We already tried to break Boros, and at the end of it, Josh and I was still like, it's still bad.
It's just, to break Boros, you just make a bad,
yeah,
like, Simic wannabe deck, so that doesn't even break it. Okay.
Yeah.
The next pairing is Krov. This is the last one, right?
Yeah.
Krov the Unredeemed and Regna the Redeemer. So Krov is 4 and a black for a 3/3. You can pay a black, sacrifice X creatures, and then target player draws X cards and gains X life and then you put X-1/1 counters on Krov. So you pay a black, sacrifice 3 creatures, target player, usually yourself, draws 3 cards, gains 3 life, and Krov becomes a 6/6 now.
Yep.
Regna is 5 and a white for a 4/4 flyer. At the beginning of each end step, if your team gained life this turn, create 2/1/1 white warrior creature tokens. Again, in Commander, your team is you, usually. Which means that if you activated Krov, you will have gained life and drawn cards, and then Regna will then trigger on the end step and create 2 more warrior creature tokens for you that you can then sack to Krov. We talked about this last episode, yeah. And that kind of gets you in this nice loop where it's giving you the fodder to sack, to draw the cards and gain the life to give you the fodder to sack, to continue that. It sounds awesome.
It sounds awesome. It's a 5-man and a 6-man commander.
If that's Krov hard. Was like a 3-mana 1/1 and Regna was like a 4-mana 3/4 flyer that did, yeah, and they did have the same abilities, then I would be into this because that feels realistic. Like you might get that combination of both out and do the thing
do
sometimes.
The thing, yeah. And that's what, like, it feels like the good partner combinations are, is they both support each other in the same way that Xander Split and Akum do as well.
And add a CMC on the curve that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Turn 5, then turn 6. That's costing all your mana on both those turns.
So you can't even use the abilities, right? You need to be able to pay X to pay black to sacrifice X.
So now on turn 7, if everything goes according to plan and they stuck around, I can start to do the thing. I also need to have somehow created a couple of creatures, or at least one creature to sacrifice to get the chain going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people are asking me if I should put Krov, or if I would put Krov in my Shadowborn Apostles deck, and it's a consideration.
It's a consideration. It definitely helps you. Yeah, Regna definitely not. Regna actually kind of works better by herself in a lot of ways, because it's just about gaining life, and then you get to do this thing. It's like, cool, and you're playing a 6-mana 4/4 flyer at that point.
Why doesn't she have lifelink or something? She has no way to trigger herself.
Well, if she could partner with Timna.
Then it would be sweet, actually.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh, wait, it makes warriors?
Yeah.
I guess it's okay.
But here's the thing, those then can start dealing damage to other opponents and paying X life and drawing cards.
True. I'd put her with Najila.
Najila, yeah. You know what? We shouldn't go down this road because it's just not a realistic one. But hey, if there's an errata to be had, maybe it's with one of these guys.
Well, Krov seems like the type of card that would be a tier one, close to a tier one, if it was just partner and not partners with.
Yes.
This is open-ended, right? It's very like you're open-ended. Saying... There's no deck that doesn't want to draw cards. And sacrificing creatures, that's something that most decks can figure out a way to do if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
It would be close to Timna, I think.
Imagine if he was in a deck that made a lot of tokens.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I mean, you can do that now.
The Bloodsower, too. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that now.
True. You can put them inside the, but it'd be amazing again. So, yeah. But that's the thing. Like, the reason that we can't do it, again, it would just break a lot of things and be a nightmare to balance both a limited set and that at the same time. But, you know, I could see a world where there's some functional errata, maybe with some guidance, being like, look, out of all of these, 3 of these are okay with partners.
Yeah. I mean, it would be sweet, but they won't do that.
Yeah.
Because they could have done that with Unstable and been like, listen, it'd be so much simpler.
True.
These are just legal in Commander. They could, like, they didn't do that. I don't know why. Okay. This is another subject.
Bandwidth, probably. All right, so that is it for this episode, guys. But we have some more fun things coming up. It's called To the Listeners. I want to know if you've just been screaming at your podcast machine.
I have an Ikra Shiddiqui Sider Condo deck, and it's awesome, and you guys are totally wrong.
Actually, Ikra Shiddiqui and Sider do work together because they're low power, high toughness.
Yeah, but it's still not a good deck.
Do you remember when I built a 4-color deck without red, and I put Sidar Condo in there, and I only put 1 green card? That's how, like, I was like, this is not what I want to do.
No, that is what you wanted to do, but it felt dirty, right? It felt wrong.
It felt wrong. It just didn't work. I should have just made it a Brea deck, obviously. But yeah, do you have any favorite partner builds? Are there any cards that you think should work as partners? Or even going back, are there old cards in the past that should work as partners as well? And specifically, I want to know if you've done something unconventional in the 105 combinations that we didn't talk about that changes our mind in some way. That'd be great to hear.
I mean, what I use the partners for is to give me colors to pull off a combination where there's not a good
way to
do it right now. Yeah. Like before Zindersplit and Akone were out, if I was going to build a coin flip deck, I would have gone to the partners. Because at least you can find some that are kind of generic enough that they're not going to be the linchpins of your deck. They're not going to... But in a pinch, they'll do something.
And they'll provide utility.
Yeah, there's like...
And they'll give you an extra color to do more goofy things with, yeah.
Exactly. So that's how I've kind of used them. But yeah, I admit, I thought originally that they were going to be...
Just had a lot more life to them.
Yeah, and it felt like, well, these four are really good, and you see those a lot, and you just don't see the others very much, which is a little bit... It's too bad.
Yep. Splitting up your strategy is very bad in Commander, I found. Once you start being like, I want to play this deck and have six different things I want to do, your deck is just... You're not going to do any of them well.
You need a log line, and it can be one sentence.
Log line, maybe a B plot.
Yeah. If you want to pick up any of these partners from either Battle Bond or C16, though, you should definitely go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone and order your singles and your Magic product there. Because when you do that, you're getting the cards that you want. We're all going to order Magic cards.
Quickly as well. Good shipping.
And while you're doing it, you're also simultaneously supporting Game Nights and this podcast and all of our content. It's a 2-for-1. It's just value.
Yeah, it's a good 2-for-1. Not to mention their foil, the C16 Commanders, that's a 3-for-1. Buy two of them, Jason. Now that's a 6-for-1.
And if you crack a pack of Battle Bond and you get a foil of one of these partners with, you will get a second foil in the same pack.
I haven't cracked packs in a very long time for the fun of it, and I'm pretty sure Battle Bond's going to be the one, because I would love to make like a cube out of this set too. It just seems like a really fun... I like play experiences, and that's what Gavin's all about. He's done, you know, he's helped out in the conspiracy sets as well. So I'm very excited for that. I just want to open a foil Rowan or Will and get the other one.
I'm excited to draft it Two-Headed Giant because I have no idea how that's going to work.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That sounds like super fun. So I'm very excited for the set. Gavin's done a really good job, and I think a lot of this stuff is playable, plus the reprints.
Yeah.
So Battlebond.
Very interesting.
We're going on and on about it, but that's because Gavin's our friend, and he did something sweet here, I think.
Yeah. I think a lot of Commander players are very grateful for this set for good reason. Our other sponsor for the show, Ultra Pro, playmats, Eclipse sleeves, now in 100 packs for your Commander decks, and you can also sleeve up and make your cards look awesome. They are the relic tokens that are really sweet, especially if you're going to be playing, you know, your Tana the Bloodsower decks, and you need to count how many Sapperlings you just made. Relic tokens, pretty awesome from Ultra Pro. You should find them in some LGSs. I've heard they've been selling out a lot, quite a bit as well. So you can always tweet
at
Ultra Pro.
If you see them, you should grab them because they sell out super fast. Yeah.
Yeah. You can also tweet at Ultra Pro and let them know, hey, I want to get more. And that's a great way to let them know. That's how they knew to make 100 packs for the Eclipse sleeves as well.
Yep.
So great way to keep in contact with a company that wants to keep in contact with you.
All right. Now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Joshua? I had the last one.
Yeah, it's true. I had the one before
that. We can talk about movies. Have you seen Solo?
No.
Okay, we can't.
It's funny because Solo is the first Star Wars movie of the new era that I didn't work on.
How about this?
So I know nothing about it.
End step. What are you looking forward to watching, Josh, as a seasoned veteran that has seen so many movies and been to so many like advanced screenings and stuff? I invited Josh to an advanced screening of a movie last week, and he's like, nah, I'm good. And I was like, I can't blame you. You've seen a lot of things, and you've done this process so many times.
Yeah, it sounds bad.
You had to edit Game Nights as well, which is very important for you guys.
The truth of the matter is that for years and years, for the last like 15 years, I basically saw like some portion of, I'd say like 70% of all the major movies that came out before they came out.
It's a lot of movies.
That doesn't mean I worked on all those movies, but in some aspect I would work on them a little because I ran a division at a company that worked on movie trailers, and the companies would have different divisions and they would work on movies from all over the landscape. And so, you know, I might not be working on Pacific Rim, but I would be in a company that was, somebody else would be, and, you know, I would go in and maybe talk with the editor and give some little notes and things. And so I would see significant portions of Pacific Rim before it came out, or I'm just using that as an example. And so only in the last like 18 months have I gotten to the point where there are movies coming out on a regular basis where I know nothing about it.
Yeah, interesting.
Which has been really exciting. So I'm actually more excited to see movies now than I have been in years and years. And I'm trying to think of Incredibles 2, I think, is pretty high
yeah,
on
me
my
too.
List.
Me too.
And I worked on the original Incredibles. That's how old I am.
65.
Yeah, I used to work on Pixar movies. So that I would say that's probably of this summer my most looking forward to from now. How about you? What?
I would say Incredibles as well. That movie looks very, very fun. And if we had to go real far into the distance, I believe Jordan Peele is coming out with a new movie as well.
Jordan Peele, anything he makes, I will go see it.
Yeah, it's just based on Get Out alone. Yeah. I still rave about Get Out to this day about
so
how
good.
Good of a movie that movie
that
is.
Guy, that guy's got talent.
Yeah, very much so.
I'm trying to think of, yes, it's weird that I didn't see Solo. I really should go see it. I'm just very anti-prequel.
Yeah.
I will see it. But
it definitely falls into that box when you watch it. You're like, oh, you have a history to address in the creation of this, essentially this movie. Like, you can't go outside of a box almost. Like, you're given a box and it's called Han Solo's past.
It's not just that, too. I'm assuming, and I haven't seen the movie and I know nothing about it, that there's going to be a bunch of scenes where the main characters are in danger.
Yep.
So you got Chewie, you got Solo, you got Lando. I know 100% that they make it out of that.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And that's just sort of ruins a basic tenet of storytelling of like what happens next, which I always find dissatisfying. I think flashbacks are fine. People often sort of throw Godfather 2 out there as like a prequel, but it's not, because there's a storyline in Godfather 2 that's advancing in the present that I don't know the end to. And there's the things with Robert De Niro are all flashbacks, which are informing the context for the story. Storyline in the present. So I think that's a totally different thing. I can't think of a prequel off the top of my head that I like.
It's really interesting too, because the nature of prequels and all that, it's almost as though you're doing a historical fiction or something that's based off of history. So you know, like, oh, Abraham Lincoln's in this movie. He's probably going to, I kind of know how his story ends, right? So you spoil that part of the suspense for you. Or because in this case, it's like Han Solo is not real. Right? But he has a history now, and he has a full-blown, like, I think a lot of people do consider him and people like Tony Stark and Iron Man to be real things and real people, honestly, especially like really young kids.
Yeah, that's
they see
true.
They see someone like Iron Man, they're like, that is Iron Man. That's straight up, I can't believe I just met Iron Man.
You know, I'll think of it, I thought of an interesting counterpoint to what I just said about prequels, and that's like, and I don't know why it's different, but it is in my head, and that's like books that were turned into movies. So like Harry Potter, I know the ending of that. Right. I read the books, and yet I can still watch those movies and enjoy them.
Maybe it's because when you were reading the books, you had that feeling.
Yeah, and so I can sort of connect to the feeling I had before, maybe. And the historical thing is really interesting. You know, you watch the movie Lincoln, and you know the outcome of the Civil War. And
you know
Emancipation Proclamation. If you know anything about history, you know how those things end up. And those movies are, I guess they don't, they're usually smart about that. They don't park the movie on
true. That's a good point.
On the outcome of those things. They're more about like the character, the motivations, the things you didn't know.
Yeah.
I guess
it also convinces you that it may not happen. I remember thinking in Lincoln, like, oh my gosh, is this actually going to work? It seems like the odds are stacked against them.
It seems like
I had a bad feeling about this.
Bringing it all back to Star Wars.
All back to Star Wars, yeah.
Okay. Well, I would encourage everybody out there to go see Solo, though, because I know everybody worked really hard on those movies, and they're a little disappointed with the outcome. So, you know.
Yeah, the box office wasn't too great. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I ate popcorn, and I laid back in the seat that reclined in the theater, and I was like, this is it. This is a summer movie experience. And if you asked me to recount to you a lot of the details, I probably wouldn't be able to.
My friend had a great quote that I always love, which is like, you know, we went to see like Transformers, one of the Transformers, the bad ones. And at the end of it, he was like, you know, that movie wasn't good, but it was loud. You know, and that's kind of summer, and it's totally fine. You eat popcorn, you know, you have some fun with your friends, and that's a valid reason to go see a movie.
100%, 100%. All right, now moving on to the cleanup step where we don't talk about movies for 20 minutes. We just have a movie podcast, Josh.
If you want to like listen to some people that actually, one, do have a movie podcast, and two, would like to have a movie podcast, then you should listen to Masters and Modern, because Ben Bateman has a podcast, maybe multiple podcasts about
they've been expanding. Yeah, action movies. Ben does a lot of just cover it. It's a really interesting network of podcasts and a lot of other radio, actually. It's really fun.
And Alex Kessler, who's the other co-host of Masters of Modern, would love to have probably a million podcasts about movies. That guy
he would probably I can imagine him listening to us talking about Solo in this very weird, technical, and precise way, and he's just thinking about the billions of things about the story and the lore and how it changed X, Y, and Z.
He would know every detail.
Yeah, and how that's really the important thing is the shape of the universe, the extended universe now, not about whether or not prequels are better because you know the outcome.
He also loves Star Wars like no True. One. He's the biggest Star Wars fan I know. And those guys also, as it turns out, they know a lot about magic, specifically the modern format, and they talk about it on their podcast, which is why it's called the Masters of Modern. And you can find them on Twitter right next to us at, on collected.company True. Right next to us, and on Twitter at the MMcast.
Mm-hmm. Our editor for the show, Craig Blanchett, Mr. Infect. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations on the shows that Craig edits, the stuff behind us at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. Highly encourage you, if you haven't seen the video versions yet, you should watch them because you see our face. I wonder how many people out there don't know what we look like.
Less these days, probably in the old days when we got most of our downloads were listens on audio, but now our audience is like 70% on YouTube.
Cool.
And Jimmy is famous, so the more people know Jimmy's face.
But from
with
what?
The hair, they're like, I don't know, is that still Jimmy?
How is he constantly waking up right before he starts the podcast? I don't get it. Is he just napping all day?
Yes. The answer is yes.
God, I wish.
Oh, one more thing. Is this the last episode that comes out before GP Vegas? No, I think there's two. But anyway, GP Vegas. If you're going to be there, look for me. I think Jimmy's probably not going to make it.
Right now it's looking like I flipped the coin. Before it was a coin flip, now it's definitely...
Now it's a coin flip with Clark's thumb, but on the other side.
On the other
side,
it's
like your opponent has Clark's thumb.
We're looking very unlikely that I will be able to make it this time.
Yeah, unfortunately. But please come find me. I will be at the Commander Championship event on Friday the 15th at 11 a.m. Find me there. Get your cool soul ring playmat.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I'll just be there. Follow me on Twitter at Josh Lee Kwai because I'll be tweeting about where I'm at and looking for games. And large segments of Commander games tend to follow us around these events. So if you find me, you'll find Commander players.
Yes, for sure. And that's the best part about the GPs for me is sitting around playing a bunch of Commander with people or occasionally signing up for sealed events too with Josh. You'll be doing a couple, I'm sure. Ooh, I brushed my head. Nice.
Brush the head. I was trying to fix the hair.
Thanks.
All right, everybody.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.